This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. We're going to have a great show, a very informative show. And I have Mr. Malcolm Crawford on today. And a lot of the guys that worked at the Sheriff's Department back in the 80s, and if you've ever been around Metro Police Department or any businesses that requires top-line security, then we've got the man here to let you know. And this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. And when you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means At Home Care is hands-on, involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care provides top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639, and online at homecaretennessee.com. That number again is 713-4639. And they are such nice people. Had lunch with Melissa and Faye the other day, and it was one of the nicest conversations I've had in a long time as it dealt with health care. Malcolm, good to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Been a long time, hasn't it? Well, not really. We were on the firing range a couple of days ago.
Last week?
Yeah, I think we tied.
You beat me a little bit.
No, I think we tied. I think I was all over the place. I don't know how I got the score. But, you know, I remember back in the days when you came to work with us, and it was in the early 80s.
Yes, it was.
And that was a different time in law enforcement, wasn't it?
I think it was. It's a lot different than it is today.
It seems like that, of course, the training wasn't as intense back then, or if you had any. By that time, we were going to the academy and had learned a few things. But, you know, law enforcement has a lot of common sense issues, a lot of drive. You have a personal interest to solve your cases and things like that, and to assist the community. But most of it, I mean, you really get into it for public service as much as anything because you want to do something for the community. But you had already been in law enforcement before you came with us.
I had been. I was at Metro in Nashville. Worked narcotics there for about 9 years. Jim Binkley was my partner.
Oh, my goodness.
And he and I made a lot of really good cases back in those days. You know, law enforcement today, the guys are dedicated. It's a tough job.
It is a tough job.
You have to respect everybody that carries a badge and a gun and goes out every day and protects society. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the firefighters. Got to give a lot of respect to EMS and the teachers as well, but still have that kindred relationship to the police officers who work every day.
And back you never lose that either.
No. You know, I've been fortunate to travel over the years in the different jobs that I've had. Met a lot of really good police officers across the United States, across the world. Back in the 70s and 80s, you know, we would work until we got done. I mean, it wasn't one of those things where you come in at 7, get off at 3. You might come in at 6 and get off at 6 the next morning. And
you didn't sign a time card or punch a time card, and you didn't get paid for it. You just did it because that was your duty.
It was, and we liked to do it. We liked to work. You know, we would get on to something and stay on it until we could get it solved, or at least get it to where a point where we could solve it. Even if we couldn't solve it, we'd still work it. And that would be any kind of investigation we did, if it was a burglary, if it's homicide, if it was an assault, drugs, whatever. And I think today the guys might like to do that, but they don't. They do have to sign the time card, I believe, and have check in and check out. Back then, we just sort of came in and did what we had to do.
Your mind was totally focused on the case that you were working, no matter what.
It was.
And I remember back, a lot of times, just about everybody in the whole department was working on something because we really didn't have that many people at the time.
Now, I think there were four detectives, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And
then you'd have to call on the patrol officers.
Correct.
If you had any available at the time. But, I mean, working 18, 20, 24 hours, 36 hours in a row was not unusual back then.
Go home, take a shower, grab a bite to eat.
Yeah.
Clean up a little bit and come back to work. And get called out in the middle of the night. Stay up until the next day. Mm-hmm. And we were talking a few minutes ago, training, work, go to training, go back to work. Mm-hmm. It was a different mindset, I believe. It's not to say that they don't do a good job today, because law enforcement the officers do a good job.
Yes.
It's just, I think we saw it in a different light back in the 70s and 80s, and then it started evolving and changing. And I think they have to have more accountability now for the hours that the officers work, as opposed to we just did the work.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, in some ways, it's controlled by a business atmosphere, but yet it's still law enforcement, and you still got to do your job. And you have to adhere to the rules because of the overtime problem. It's something that we never had to fool with, whether you were in management or whether you're on the front line.
I think everybody knew who was working.
Yeah, they did.
And they knew what they were working on. Mm-hmm. And they knew they were working on something that they had to get done. You know, I read an interesting article about the Memphis Police Department. Evidently, they don't have GPS in their cars. So the Memphis chief now wants to put GPS in the cars so he can track where the officers are and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you something about the mentality of what they're looking at, and it is a business.
It makes them wonder, what is the issue there? Are they trying to just follow their officers for any particular reason? I mean, that's the thing you look at. Do they trust the officers where they're saying they're checking out at, or things like that?
I don't know.
It does put something in the officer's mind that maybe they don't have as much respect for us as they should.
Well, I think that, you know, that started a long time ago. That started in the 90s, and it's still there today.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to connect that to some type of issue with accidents and officers.
Mm-hmm.
And I never could get that connection, why they wanted GPS to determine, you know, where the officers were so they could avoid accidents, because that was what they were trying to imply. At least that's what the article said. I think it was more of, if they have accidents, they want to know how fast they were going, if they were running code emergency, if they were speeding, you know, if they had the sirens on, the blue lights, and so that they could use that when it comes to liability issues in court. I'm sure that's what it was.
And liability has become a big issue in law enforcement.
Certainly, certainly.
I mean, if you want to look at the drawer that has the most paperwork in it, look at the one that is marked lawsuits on it. I mean, there's a number of them. And, you know, the sad thing about it is probably 99 point something of them are so frivolous that they shouldn't have ever been filed anyway.
I think that's the general practice in a whole, not only just in law enforcement, but frivolous lawsuits. You know, we see them every day in what we do now. I mean, there are lawsuits filed that when you serve papers, you look at the lawsuit and say, well, that's strange. I mean, it's just every day. I think the courts need to rethink how lawsuits are filed and how they look at it, just frivolous lawsuits.
Well, you're held hostage by them, because no matter what, it's going to cost the city or the county or the state or the federal government a lot of money. You're automatically going to pay whether it's frivolous or non-frivolous. There's nothing you can do about it, because the cost is so high when a suit comes in, because of all the people involved, the attorneys, the witnesses, and the cost for courts. It's just unbelievable in the way it's set up. I think most people feel like that it needs. They're always worried about what if that one or two people. Maybe they have been wrong somehow during the process of what was going on. But you and I know they're very few and far between, and the cost of it, does it really outweigh a person or two that may have had a problem that probably could be redirected some other way?
Well, you know, cities and counties can't really budget for lawsuits. I mean, you take the recent issue that's happened in this county alone,
right,
where the counties had to defend the actions mm-hmm. of the government. How can you really budget that mm-hmm. in your year-to-year budget? I mean, that puts you in a hole economically. And today's economics, you don't really need that. Although people have the right to file a lawsuit, but still those economics, how can you really say we're going to budget $10 million to fight lawsuits this year? You just take them as they come. And unfortunately, there are some that cost a lot of money to defend.
Well, you know, there are ways that you can come back, but they're never used for some reason. And I just noticed recently, I can't remember what area it was in, but a federal judge made a lady pay all the cost on a lawsuit that they had filed, and it seemed like it may have been against one of the musicians, but I can't remember who it was. But you, when you came from Metro and you went into Rutherford County, that was a big change from what you had been doing, because you had been working narcotics over there in some of the roughest areas in Davidson County.
It was you know, we were working heroin traffic
mm.
and cocaine traffic, but Jim Binkley and I worked in North Nashville and East Nashville and worked a lot of heroin. But we also worked with some of the guys at the Sheriff's Department down here mm-hmm. in investigating some cases, because some of the distributors that were distributing drugs in Davidson County lived in Rutherford County. So
hard to believe.
Back in those days, we were working with some of the guys here, and that's how we became so close. We were actually selling drugs in Rutherford County. Went to the DA and asked, "Hey, can we sell drugs in this county?" We sold nothing less than 100 pounds of pot and nothing less than a pound of cocaine. And the DA prosecuted every case that we made in this county for it. Made a lot of good arrests out of it.
That was Guy Dotson at the time.
Was.
Great DA.
Yeah.
And passed it on to another great DA, yeah. Bill Weitzel. Bill
was the one that prosecuted all those cases. I think Guy was a little bit, at first, he was a little bit concerned. Here are these big city cops coming down to Rutherford County. And after he sat down and talked to us, I think he was okay with what we were trying to do.
Now, explain to the people what you were doing when you were selling into Rutherford County, because they may not know how that works.
Well, we put the word out that we were selling drugs, and drug dealers would call us, and they would ask, they'd get in contact with us, and they would ask, "We understand you have drugs for sale." And we would say yes. We recorded every phone call that we made, mm-hmm. every conversation we had. We always gave them an opportunity to walk away from whatever deal we put together. But it's just a fascination with the drugs and the money. They always wanted to buy the drugs. So we let them buy it. As soon as they walked out, we arrested them. Took the cars, took the money, took the drugs back, resold the drugs again to somebody else that wanted to buy them.
You know, I have seen in the past, not you guys and us, but in other areas where, and I've never seen it in Rutherford County, but working narcotics, you have to build up a certain amount of income to be able to afford to continue to work narcotics. And turf issues developed sometimes over where you'd have people coming in from outside. You guys did it right when you went to the DA and you made sure that all clearances were there and you weren't going to be butting heads working the same group of people all the time. But we have seen times, because you can make some pretty good cases, some pretty big cases, and through a lot of hard work, some of that monies and fines, that goes back into the department that was working it, and it helps fund that department. In fact, I guess the narcotics department may be the only one that I can ever remember that actually, in essence, was paying for itself.
You know, back in the 70s when they passed all the drug laws in Tennessee, mm-hmm. all the money from fines and sentences and seized money from assets went to the narcotics division. Mm-hmm. In Metro, they were putting in a general fund, and we asked that all that money be put in to a narcotics fund. Mm-hmm. And the police department was able to buy automobiles, equipment. I think at one point they bought a helicopter used for surveillance. Mm-hmm. That was in Metro. We came down here, and the arrangement that we made with the district attorney here was, you can keep the money, you can prosecute the people. Mm-hmm. If we need to pay informants, which we did pay informants, mm-hmm. we'd ask you pay those informants. And it was worked out with a good arrangement. I think the DA was very happy. I know the sheriff's department was happy.
Of course.
They were getting the money from the proceeds. And like I said, we made some really good cases. Worked with Virgil and David and
David Grisham
and mm-hmm. and we had some really good time. We had fun working cases.
Now David, bless his heart, he's closed behind four walls in Nashville over at the at the federal building.
Federal building, yeah.
I know he's going crazy. What do you think?
Probably. You know, when he retired, he said, we got together for lunch, and I said, what are you going to do? And he said, I don't know. I'm going to do a little bit of woodworking, because that's what he does. Yeah. And the next thing I knew, he's working as a deputy marshal over in the federal building.
Well, he couldn't stay out of the business, no matter what level
no,
it was.
No.
Now, when you crossed over, it was a different lifestyle. Could you tell a difference in how the officers worked here as compared to Davidson County, although a lot of it is very similar?
During that time, in the 70s, it was similar. The sheriff's department was smaller, mm-hmm. so you had a little closer-knit group
right.
than you did at Metro. Metro at that time had probably 1,100 police officers, and I think we had 40 or 45 in the narcotics unit. So we were close in our squads that we had in the drug unit, but as far as being close with uniformed guys, only if you knew them. Sheriff's Department, I think everybody was close.
Yeah.
Because you had to rely on everybody to help get done what needs to be done. It was a little bit of a difference. It was actually a welcomed difference. Mm-hmm. Working where I'd been with all the issues that comes along with the job, and working drugs, and then coming over here and working general crimes and drugs as well, but investigating different issues, it gave me a little bit more experience and a little bit different view of what took place.
It kept you in shape, didn't you? Running over the hills in Rutherford County.
Chasing some of the guys we had to chase.
Yeah.
there's some truth to that.
Yeah, I remember one particular case. I'm not going to get into it in depth, but we chased this guy all over the hills over in Kittrell and Readville, and you remember it well. And it was so funny. It was in the wintertime, and we had all these warm clothes on, and he had on, I think, a T-shirt, and he was staying outside. I mean, it was miserably cold over there.
Yes, he was.
Healthy as a horse. And we arrest him. You remember?
I remember the arrest.
Kind of a bushwhack. But anyway, we got him in jail, and the first night he gets pneumonia. I'll never forget that. I said, "What luck!" Now you have met a lot of different law enforcement officers across the world.
I have.
Now, that has to be really interesting. I guess probably because of the books and the movies, Scotland Yard has really always been right at the pinnacle, right at the top for some reason. And we're going to take a quick break before we get into it, and then we want to talk about Scotland Yard. We'll be right back with you.
Great time for fishing here in Middle Tennessee. This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors, inviting all of y'all to come by and pick up your supplies. We've got rods and reels and line, artificial baits to get you going.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
Like you're going to Smyrna or half a mile from Thompson Lane on the right.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page. Since 1957, Advantage Home Improvement has been satisfying customers all over Middle Tennessee. From roofing to remodeling, we have one goal in mind: to exceed our customers' expectations. We are a licensed contractor, carry $1 million of liability insurance, and proudly maintain an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. If you have damage from recent storms, or maybe you're just looking to have your kitchen remodeled, call us today for a free estimate at 890-8463.
Your personal identity is more valuable than cash or jewelry to many thieves. With just a few pieces of information, thieves can manufacture a new identity. With access to your banking accounts, credit cards, thieves can ruin your good reputation. For tips on how to keep your identity safe, visit GoBBB.org or call me at 867-0032. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
Tennessee Radio Network News. I'm Jim Williams. Testimony begins today in the murder trial of 21-year-old Miles Stout. He's accused of killing a teen in Chattanooga. The jury was selected to hear the second-degree murder, reckless homicide, and reckless endangerment case. The defense will argue Stout didn't know a handgun was loaded when it went off, killing 18-year-old Miles Compton in March of last year. The prosecution contends Stout shot Compton in the chest deliberately during a gathering at a local home. The trial is expected to continue into next week. We told you in advance they were going to crack down on drunk drivers over Labor Day.
The THP found only one driver who tried to refuse a blood alcohol test during the holiday weekend. Troopers used the new no refusal statute over the Labor Day weekend in 16 counties statewide. Rutherford County had the most DUI arrests with 21.
TRN's Andrew Warren. And Craig Garber, the man accused of knifing three family members to death over the weekend in suburban Nashville and Bellevue, is now listed in stable condition at Vanderbilt Hospital. Garber reportedly has mental issues. He was hospitalized in critical condition with several stab wounds he had inflicted on himself.
Wouldn't it be great if we were warned of life's risks?
It's a great day for fishing.
Yeah, but keep heading in that direction and you're going to sink your boat.
If you have diabetes, an A1C test does just that. Warns if you should adjust your diabetes control to prevent organ damage. Find out more about the A1C test and the role it plays in reducing diabetes complications. Contact your local healthcare provider today and ask about the A1C test, funded through an agreement with the state of Tennessee.
Every 20 minutes, another family hears the heartbreaking news that their child has autism. There is no medical detection or cure for autism, but there is hope. Walk with Autism Speaks to help make a difference. Walk to raise awareness. Walk to fund research. The need has never been greater. So bring a friend and walk now for Autism Speaks. Step by step, we'll find the missing pieces. For more information on a walk near you, visit us at walknowforautism.org.
The U.S. corn harvest continues ahead of schedule, with some states nearly half finished at a time when they're usually just getting started. The USDA says its weekly crop update that little has changed in the condition of drought-damaged corn and soybeans. Jackson police say they have a suspect in custody following a shooting at a Best Buy store yesterday. A 35-year-old woman was shot while stocking store shelves there. She survived and was taken to the hospital. No word on her condition. Four reproduction Civil War cannons will be installed in Memphis's Confederate Park, replacing real Civil War cannons that were sacrificed during World War II as part of a scrap metal drive. They'll be assembled off-site, then moved by trailer and crane to their new home today. I'm Kristen Thoburn, Tennessee Radio Network News.
Welcome to Let's Talk Titans. I'm Blaine Bishop, and this is the newest addition to the team, Ralph Henderson. Good to see you.
Blaine, it's good to be seen. And good that we finally met, you know, intersecting careers and all.
Now, you've just won the Tennessee Titans lottery game to become the 12th Titan, right?
That is correct. And I've already got some new plays drawn up. Got your playbook on ya?
Nah, they make you turn that in.
That's okay. I can walk you through most of this stuff.
Didn't know designing plays was part of being the 12th Titan.
Blaine, baby, number 12 doesn't give 110%. He gives 112%.
Play the Titans Instant Game from the Tennessee Lottery. Win $100,000 or become the team's most famous fan, the 12th Titan, with game day duties like retrieving the kickoff tee and more.
Ralph, all these plays have you going both ways. Nobody does that.
The game's changing, Blaine. The game's changing every day.
The new Titans Instant Game, only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
I'm Robert McConnell from Robert's Discount Auto Repair in Murfreesboro. What makes us different than other repair shops? We proudly employ Christian technicians. Our mechanics are honest, they do high-quality work, and they only recommend service and repairs that are truly needed for your car or truck. Give us a call at 896-1407 or just stop on by. Remember, at Roberts, we beat the dealership on service and price.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
WeatherEye.
For the forecast area today, slight chance for showers and thunderstorms. We'll have plenty of sunshine, though. High temperatures still warm in the low 90s. Tonight, spotty showers and storms. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, it's 75.
Our good neighbor of the day today, Wanda Eskew. Congratulations, Wanda, receiving a bouquet of flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts. And our birthday cake winner, Ruth Ward. Happy birthday to you, Ruth. And Ruth receives the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland.
That update brought to you by Safe Auto. You had an accident and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? You'd call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO for affordable liability insurance. Drive safe, spend less. Safe Auto.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Malcolm Crawford. And we want to let you know that this part of his show is brought to you by Gordon Ralston Photography, 315 Hickerson Drive in Murfreesboro. And there are two great people, Al Gordon and Larry Ralston. And Al is a master craftsman photographer. Larry, a certified craftsman, and certified in a lot of other ways, too. And they're both hometown guys. The most awarded studio in the Middle Tennessee area, operating a full-service photographic studio in Murfreesboro. They specialize in weddings, high school seniors, and family portraits. Their work is classic yet current with a creative edge. Al was even awarded the Grand Award for the best wedding image in the world. Gordon Ralston, they look forward to meeting you and will treat you like family. And I think they've done just about every class reunion, too. I mean, they did a great picture for us in our class of 59. All right. We were talking about going outside and meeting other agencies, how they do things across the world. And we were talking about going over into England. And tell me how those guys work over there, because they seem so smooth and never flustered. Is that a correct image of Scotland Yard?
No, they're just like everyday cops.
Oh, man.
They come out of the uniform services for the either the Met Police or the UK Police, and they go into non-uniform, and they want to have an air about them. But when you put them down with us, just everyday guys. I was fortunate to work with four Scotland Yard, retired Scotland Yard inspectors, and three other U.S. law enforcement officers. Worked a two-year investigation based in California, but it was international. Mm-hmm. And it was a corporate investigation. Wow. And each one of us had at least 30 years of investigative experience. So you multiply that by eight. And you
but
can,
it's 240, right?
Yeah, you can tell the number of years, a quarter of a century, mm-hmm, of 250 years of experience that we all had together, and sat around. We could look at issues, we could look at information, we could look at clues, and come up with a really good, viable way to investigate. Met those guys. Met some folks from Taipei, mm-hmm, an expat from Taipei who was married to the chief's daughter, mm-hmm, in Taipei, a retired Hong Kong police inspector who was a great guy, and his wife, and my wife and I went back to the UK in 2009 to a wedding of one of the Scotland Yard inspector's, wow, daughters, and we had a great time. They were just everyday guys.
if you take politics out of everything, law enforcement officers are just about the same everywhere you go, aren't they?
I think they are. You know, as I said a minute ago, law enforcement, you can go from state to state to state, city to city. Mm-hmm. You take all the politics away and the business side of law enforcement away, and it's the same kind of guys trying to do the same kind of job. It's one of those fraternities you can't be in unless you've been in it.
Right.
And you just can't say, I belong to that. You have to be part of it. And they treat you the same. Once you say you're a you've been a police officer or you're mm-hmm. retired or this or that, they just treat you like a brother. I know the business that I'm involved in now, go to different cities and we try to get reports mm-hmm. and try and get information. And we tell them, hey, we've done this, we've done that. And they say, not a problem. We'll take care of you.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Now, in England, do they still have the no handgun rule for their officers? I mean, remember the bobbies used to not carry one years ago, except under certain circumstances.
Well, they have gun squads, but now most of the Met Police carry automatic weapons mm-hmm. and semi-automatic handguns. Mm-hmm. I know that we have some photographs made, June and I, my wife, and I have photographs made when we were in the UK with some of the Met Police mm-hmm. that have automatic weapons. And if there's three of them together, at least one or maybe two will have a fully automatic weapon. And they have finally realized that it's not necessarily the code that they used to have where the criminals would turn each other in and they wouldn't assault the police. The police are just another target, just like they are anywhere else in the world. And they have to be prepared to take care of the general public as well as the buildings and the security of the people involved. So I was quite surprised that they carry a lot of firearms. And it's even more than what I think the general public would know.
Is that due to a change in the makeup of the people that are in England now? Because they had such a great respect, for, as you mentioned, for the bobbies and for law enforcement back years ago, that they would react with the officers if they were in trouble or whatever. And I hate to see that here that they've lost that kind of.
Well, I think it is a makeup of the country. I mean, if you look at the UK, mm-hmm. is an import. Mm-hmm. They have different nationalities of people around the world, and come with that, if you look at all the issues they have with when the IRA was in power and when they were doing the things that they were doing in the UK, and now you look at all the terrorism threats mm-hmm. that they all have, and they break up a lot of terrorist plots over there. They just have a lot of access to a lot of people that would harm somebody. So I think they finally realized, hey, we've got to step up to the plate, just like the counterparts do in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever work with Interpol?
Never have worked with Interpol. One of the guys that was one of the retired Scotland Yard inspectors had some good contacts with Interpol, and we asked some questions of Interpol, but I've never had any experience with them. It would be interesting to see how they work.
Well, now you have spread out, and you're in private business now. But yet you're still in law enforcement because you're carrying your expertise into the area. What are your main projects that you work on now?
Well, I'm involved in three different aspects of, mm-hmm. of what I do. I've got a private investigative firm. I work with a retired homicide investigator, Larry Flair, out of Nashville. Mm-hmm. He and I are partners in a PI business. We are involved in criminal defense, which is a little bit of a difference from...
Whoa, on the dark side.
As they say, on the dark side. We have some...
You don't advertise on television, do you?
No. Those guys usually are in the lawsuit business. But we work with some of the larger firms in Nashville, mm-hmm. Some of the attorneys that we used to work with when they were prosecutors and we were police officers. Mm-hmm. We work with some corporate clients that we have, and we also work with some executive protection.
before we go any further, because I don't want to break it up, we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Malcolm Crawford.
Good morning. I just wanted to clarify when the gentleman there said Met Police, he should have said the Metropolitan London Police that have the guns. I'm originally from London, England. A lot of people here in Murfreesboro wouldn't know when he just said Met Police. Also, people do not have the respect for the police force that I had when I was a young woman. We were brought up to believe that the policeman was our best friend, but it isn't that way any longer. Anyway, I'm enjoying listening to the program today, and I just wanted to clarify that so that the people would know when he said Met Police, he was talking about the Metropolitan London Police. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Well, goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I didn't notice an accent there, did you?
A little bit. And she's right, it is a Metropolitan London Police, yeah. But I just, you know, you think Met Police because that's what I've heard from the guys that I used to work with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But
well, in law enforcement, we always shorten everything.
We do.
I mean, we have so much to say, we have to make it brief somewhere along the line.
Correct. But back to the PI business, and we have some corporate clients that we work with and involving corporate security, mm-hmm. and security consulting.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go in and look at their facilities and give them ways to enhance the ability to provide security for their employee base.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also work with a company by the name of Associated Protective Service. Mm-hmm. And that's a company that provides executive and corporate security, armed security.
Mm-hmm.
And they're based in Nashville, and we work with them. And we have a couple of groups that we provide ongoing basis security consulting with and, mm-hmm. and provide their security arrangements whenever they travel.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an event coming up where we have 157 officers working the Women's Half Marathon in Nashville, and we provide...
And that surprised me. You were telling me that earlier. I never think of that type of security needed for a marathon.
Well, this is a half, uh-huh. and it's September 22nd,
uh-huh.
and this is our second year providing the whole security,
mm-hmm.
and we have to have officers at just about every intersection to make sure that the runners aren't harmed by any vehicles, make sure vehicles are out of the traffic lane so that the runners can have, you know, the full access of the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to get those officers. The city doesn't provide it, mm-hmm. and we have to get them. And they're paid for by the run event itself.
Well, I always envisioned that marathons and things that were really community public events like that, the current law enforcement people would take care of all of the traffic control and things like that.
I think when you get to the larger races, cities like Metro Nashville, Davidson County, mm-hmm. really don't have the budget to have 170 or 150 officers working the streets,
that's a lot.
You know, for 6 to 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of money. So they have to look at it coming from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they contract with private organizations.
Mm-hmm.
The company hires off-duty officers and retired officers,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have been through an academy, mm-hmm. to be hired by this particular company. And that way we know that those guys are actually going to be able to do what they need to do on the street.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also involved in protection of very well-known people.
Correct. We provide some security and some executive protection for some groups that travel out of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
and some of the individuals that show up at those group meetings,
mm-hmm.
Some well-known politicians and prior public servants.
Now, some of those names, I would have thought that they would have had their own private people with them. I mean, they're people that can certainly afford it.
Sometimes they travel with security, and it depends on where they are. Sometimes they don't, and when they're at those specific events, we provide the executive protection for them,
mm-hmm.
just so that they're not embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest things we do, is to make sure they're not embarrassed or harmed, and that they can actually do what they were asked to do at those events. But some do travel with their own security, but when they're at the events, we take care of them.
Now, when you're having, say, someone who is making a public speech or whatever, and they're very well known, how many of you guys are going to be out there in the audience seeing what's going on and behind the scenes?
That depends on who it is and where it is and if it's a closed venue or if it's opened to invitation. Mm-hmm. We could have anywhere from 2 to 10. Mm-hmm. There are events that we know that we're going to have issues with. We bring more people in. If we have intelligence information from local law enforcement on some of the groups that may be protesting, because some of these folks are controversial folks, so we know ahead of time what we need to do, and we'll bring extra personnel in.
You have to have an enormous amount of training to work in that venue, because there are so many unforeseen things that can happen during that situation. And of course, we've seen it over the years where we've had assassinations that have occurred, and really, you think back, what could you have done to have stopped it? I mean, I know you guys go over all those scenarios and things like that, and I think probably the most unusual one was probably John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy's, when he was assassinated down in Dallas. I've seen that run over and over and over, and you hear all the theories that what might have happened, and I actually heard word from people that were there at the time. It kind of, you know, when we first started training in law enforcement, you would put law enforcement officers in a room, and you'd have something unusual happen in front of them, and then it would be gone, and then they would have to write down what they saw.
Yes.
And you'd almost never have one that was like another in that room.
Well, you know, if you take witness statements,
yeah,
in a bank robbery, if you have 10 witnesses, you're going to get 10 different statements.
Mm-hmm.
They never see the same thing. They never give you the same information. And police officers are the same way. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about the exercises in a class. Mm-hmm. You go in and pretend to shoot somebody in a class, you'll get, if there's 30 people, you'll get 30 different descriptions of who it was and what kind of gun it was and how they did it. That's just because people see things differently. You know, I don't think you could, every time you have a major event take place, like the Kennedy assassination or the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan, mm-hmm. every time any of those happen, law enforcement changes and they adapt and they change the way they do things. They'll think of different advanced ways of trying to protect it. The protectee that they have. So they try to change things. Now they're trying to think ahead. Well, what can we see? What do we think? What will happen? I know that when I was working drugs, we used to sit around and figure out how we would bring drugs in the United States. How would we sell it? How would we get it here?
Mm-hmm.
So that we could think the same way that the guys were that were selling it. Same thing with a guy that's committing armed robberies.
You know, when you were working narcotics in Nashville, one of the things that we always worried about when a narcotics officer is subjected to all the things that are going on around him or her, it kind of messes you up a little bit in your mind. It has to, because what you're saying is you're thinking just like they are. You're having to adapt to it. And then in some respects, you have to kind of get yourself away from it, because we never liked anybody working longer than 2 years, because in 2 years, it affects you after that, and then you have to deprogram yourself.
Well, I think my wife says it best. She said that she never said anything about me working in narcotics, because mm-hmm. she knew that was my job. But I had a slanted view of just about everybody I met, because I never met anybody that was not a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left working narcotics, she said my entire personality changed, which it probably did, because I was dealing with just a criminal element every day, not just working drugs, but everybody I talked to. They were all in the same boat. And you do get jaded. You get a slanted view of it. Was it worth spending that much time in it? I can't tell you. I mean, I had a good time working, mm-hmm. and I got a lot of really good experience.
Made a lot of friends.
Made a lot of friends. Yeah. Made a lot of enemies. Still have a lot of good friends.
That's one thing about the narcotics people, actually more today than it was back years ago. They don't like anybody taking their money away from them. And they don't like anybody messing in their business. And sometimes the law enforcement officer that's working becomes a major target for them.
Yeah, and you know, there are some times that police officers go bad. Mm-hmm. You know, and they start selling drugs, get involved in crime. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate. It puts a black eye on every one of us. Every time somebody does something that they shouldn't be doing, it gives us a black eye. And I still consider it giving me a black eye, even though I'm not active working the streets. Mm-hmm. But every time you read one of those articles about somebody that's done something, it's always a black eye.
The fellowship of law enforcement officers is different than anything else that I know of. And you're all under pressure. You're supposed to stay squeaky clean no matter what happens. You've got an officer out there making $35,000, $40,000 a year. And in some cases, he's seeing millions go by him. Right there, in with the people that he's working with when he's undercover, and the pressure. If you got the right officer in there, the pressure is going to be very minimal. But if you got one in there that maybe has a few weaknesses, it's tough. It really is tough.
It certainly can be, and I think that's where people, you know, go to the other side of the fence and start committing crimes. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do that. It's easy to see the lure of money. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, it's there every day. I remember the first time that we served a search warrant with while we were working at Metro, but working with the Sheriff's Department down mm-hmm. here. Guy Dotson came over, and I was there gathering all the evidence up and processing it because it was easy for us to do it. We did it every day. Somebody had found a bundle of money, and I'd opened it up, and it was $25,000. So Guy Dotson sat down, and he just wanted to make sure that money was counted.
But he did trust you.
He trusted us.
But that's all the checks and balances that sure. you go through
sure.
at that level. Okay, we want to let you know that this part of his show, and we're talking about Malcolm Crawford, was Murfreesboro Automotive. And when you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive. Turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on the Ridgely Road.
If you want to get some barbecue, I'll tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
Hello, this is Adam Tipton with the Rutherford County Farm Bureau. We would like to show our appreciation to all of our Farm Bureau members by inviting you to our annual meeting on Monday, September the 10th at the Lane Agri-Park Center, 315 John R. Rice Boulevard. We will be serving barbecue with all the trimmings from 5 until 6:15 p.m. with the meeting following the meal. Again, we appreciate our Farm Bureau members and look forward to seeing you there. For more information, call 893-1213 or visit our website at rcfarmbureau.org.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair, quality automotive repair service at honest, fair prices on Broad Street, across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
When was the last time you got a professional oil change service? Our technicians will thoroughly inspect your car or truck before you hit the highway on that big trip. We also carry BG products to maximize your engine's performance.
Honest, personal, and professional service for your car.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad,
across from Ford of Murfreesboro. We care, and we're here to help.
We're talking with this area's only certified physician in heart CT, Dr. Rishi Saxena. Before you have a stress test or heart catheterization, consider the 64-slice CT scan.
We could find the same information without taking too much risk.
It only takes minutes, there are no needles, and it could show things other tests miss.
You could act on it and prevent heart attack and death from happening.
No referral is necessary for the 64 slice CT scan. Call 896-4800 and make an appointment with Dr. Rishi Saxena.
Great time for fishing here in Middle Tennessee. This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors inviting all y'all to come by and pick up your supplies. We've got rods and reels and line, artificial baits.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
Like you're going to Smyrna, we're half a mile from Thompson Lane on the right.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Malcolm Kelman. Malcolm. You cover a lot of ground with your security. I mean, you go all over the world. You deal with different things. Are these... do you do any what you might call... corporation thefts and those type of things? Because I remember you were really good with camera work. I mean, you could put things in that nobody would ever know that they were there, and you could become a top-notch spy.
Well, we have a lot of work that we do with corporations. Mm-hmm. They have internal theft or external theft. Mm-hmm. We follow the law when it comes to mm-hmm. Covert cameras.
Right.
Those are very, it's very specific. Audio devices, very specific. Tracking devices, very specific. Mm-hmm. So Larry Flair and I, the other PI I work with, when we're asked to investigate issues, we want to know all of the problems, and we tell people what we can do and what we can't do. And we also tell them that we're going to follow the law when it comes to what we can do as far as cameras go. We also recommend cameras for small businesses and even large businesses. Recently completed a security review of a pretty major business. Recommended a whole litany of enhancements to their security program. Mm-hmm. Not only physical security, but their policies and procedures and guidelines and how to buy into a security program. And I gained a lot of that knowledge when I was at Oregon Health Sciences University as their chief of police, and mm-hmm. Consolidated Freightways as their director of corporate security. So I have the knowledge. I had the largest integrated access control system on the West Coast.
Wow.
Outside of Whidbey Island Naval Station. Mm-hmm. At OHSU, and gave me a lot of experience. Now I translate that into what I do now. But it's interesting to go into companies and people will say, well, can't you just put a camera up there? And no, not really. I had a guy yesterday tell me, you know, hey, can you put one in put a dummy camera up? And I said, no, that doesn't work. And he said, well, can you put a camera in the bathroom because we're having theft and people are stealing stuff and putting it in their purses? And I said, can't do it. So it's just an educational thing. We also try to educate corporations and businesses on what is legal and what's not legal.
The thing about it is that most people, the average guy, is not as suspicious and aware as a law enforcement officer, because they've lived it every day, and they see the things that could be done to make their area safer. You and I have seen a lot of these cameras that have caught people that are leaving from a bank or a store somewhere where they've stolen something, and of course the guys are usually have a mask on or something, but anyway, they're usually very poor quality, aren't they?
A lot of them are, and I think that's because of two things. People try to get the cheapest cameras they can get.
Right.
And they don't keep them in good repair. Mm-hmm. And the video portion is so bad, mm-hmm. because of the cameras. And that's one of the things that we try to tell people when they're trying to upgrade. Mm-hmm. You can go cheap, mm-hmm. but you're not going to get the quality that you want. Now, there are inexpensive, really good cameras, mm-hmm. but you have to know how to shop it. And the same thing with the DVRs, the recording devices. You just have to know how to shop it and what to look for. The prices are coming down because the quality is there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have, say, 100 cameras, you know, you can get breaks on them because you can buy in quantity. I think one of the things about law enforcement today is there are so many video cameras out. I mean, if you look around in downtown areas, there are cameras just about everywhere. This store has it, that store has it, this bank has it, that bank has it. So when there's a crime that's committed, the first thing that law enforcement does and should do is go around to every one of those banks and those stores and say, do you have video cameras? Mm-hmm. Yes. Can we look at it? Because you might get a piece of information. There have been a lot of crimes that have been solved through just plain old viewing of video cameras. And that's good. I mean, we're talking about the UK. Downtown London has cameras everywhere. And while my wife and I were there, we went into a trial just to see what they did in their trials. And they were showing video of a guy that committed a crime. And it went from camera to camera to camera to camera for about 10 minutes. We watched video, different parts of town, until he was caught.
Technology's changed everything, hasn't it?
It has. It has. It's enhanced.
And if you're able to keep up, it makes your community a whole lot safer than what it's ever been. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And with you guys, do you really need somebody like you to come in to a town or a business and actually maybe scout the area and look around and tell them what they need to do to make their community safer? Because sometimes it's just simple knowledge.
Well, a lot of people don't think about video cameras and how to look at that and where to position them. I mean, one business I went in and they had 15 fixed-mounted cameras. Mm-hmm. It was showing them 15 different views, mm-hmm. 15 different locations. We recommended that they take all those out and put what we call pan, tilt, zoom cameras in, mm-hmm. because of what the business was, it worked out a lot better for them. It would help. You know, just because we have the knowledge base, if they wanted to consult with us to come in and try and enhance their business and enhance their security. Physical security in companies that have a lot of parts that people can take, small parts, stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be used to enhance it.
One thing you're talking about, while you're talking about that enhancing it, I know one case, that there's a murder case here, that the camera work is okay, but it could have been a whole lot better and made the case a whole lot simpler, and you probably know which one I'm talking about. Yeah. Caller, welcome aboard with Malcolm Cavill.
Yes, I was talking about the cameras and stuff.
Yes.
Helping with crimes. And these bars and in these all these businesses in town, it's got all these cameras and TVs and everything. Wouldn't it be good for, like, when you first walk into the business there on one of their TVs, or when you walk in at any of the businesses that has a capability to have, like, pictures of the most wanted just flashing up on that one TV when you walk in that business, and that maybe we could catch some of these people that's most wanted, and maybe we'll run some of them out of here just causing a lot of trouble.
Well, that's not a bad idea. I mean, the TBI does that on some of the digital billboards now. When they'll put up.
Just like if you had it in your business and you had somebody to walk in and they just looked up there and seen that and they seen themselves, they'd leave. And you wouldn't have that, they wouldn't be in there maybe to cause trouble or to do something or call a scene or have a problem.
Well, you'd have to get the buy-in from the different business folks.
Yeah,
you know, they'd
have
to be.
Business, I would be doing that to keep the ones that I didn't need.
Well, sometimes
I just want to pass it by you there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That's an interesting statement there.
It is. You know that you could do that, man, but the business owners would have to buy into it, and they would have to because. Putting it up is a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
because could it cause some issues? That's me, but I'm not wanted.
Yeah,
you know, that type of thing. So I don't know.
Well, Malcolm, it's been a great show.
Thanks, Truman.
I always enjoy being with you. You're
same
a
here.
Very interesting man.
You
and
are.
I'm
too.
Glad to see you doing so well. There'll probably be a movie on you one of these days.
I doubt that. America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, to protect their area. That's exactly right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back on in the morning at 9 a.m. And everybody have a great night.